This is VOA News by Ramon. I'm Tommy McKean. Tropical Storm Sally churned northward on Sunday, poised to turn into a hurricane and send life-threatening storm surge along the northern Gulf of Mexico. It is expected to become a hurricane Monday and reach shore by early Tuesday, bringing hurricane conditions to regions stretching from the Morgan City, Louisiana, to Ocean Springs, Mississippi. Tropical storm conditions are expected in the region by Monday. Forecasters say Sally could produce rain totals up to 24 inches by the middle of the week. Its maximum sustained wind Sunday evening were 60 miles per hour. Warnings of strong winds that could fan the wildfires on the U.S. West Coast have added urgency to firefighters' efforts. The alerts stretch from hard-hit southern Oregon to northern California and last through Monday evening. One family that lost their home fears having to evacuate a second time because of the weather. Authorities say nearly all the dozens of people reported missing after a devastating blaze in southern Oregon have been accounted for, but the fires have killed 35 people from California to Washington State. The flames have turned homes into rubble, forced tens of thousands to flee, and shrouded the region with smoke so thick that air quality was some of the worst in the world. A vast of vital sweatland swath. A vital wetlands continues to burn in Brazil, sweeping across several national parks and obscuring the sun behind dense smoke. Preliminary figures from the Federal University of Rio de Janeiro indicate that nearly 5,800 square miles have burned since the start of August. That's an expanse comparable to the area consumed by the historic blazes now afflicting California. This is VOA News. New Zealand's Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern said Monday that the country will lift coronavirus restrictions across the country in 1 week, except in its biggest city, Auckland, which hits the epicenter of a second wave of infections. Ardern said Auckland's restrictions would be reviewed next Monday. She also said the government would immediately ease all physical distancing requirements on planes. That's a boost for New Zealand, Air New Zealand, which has had to limit passengers on its planes for months. She said masks will still be mandatory on all public transport. New Zealand, a nation of 5 million, had appeared to have succeeded in halting community transmission of COVID-19, but a fresh outbreak in Auckland in August prompted the government to place the city back on lockdown. Globally, there are more than 922,000 COVID-19-related deaths and more than 28.9 million confirmed infections. The United States and Brazil together make up more than a third of the deaths, while the U.S., India, and Brazil together make up well more than half of the world's infections. Many teachers are choosing not to return to the classroom because of the coronavirus threat in the United States, and schools around the U.S. are scrambling to find replacements. In some places, this means lowering certification requirements to help get substitutes in the door. Several states have seen surges in educators filing for retirement or taking leaves of absence. The departures are straining staff in places that were dealing with shortages of teachers and substitutes even before the pandemic, and it created an education crisis. Teachers in at least three states have died after bouts with the coronavirus since the dawn of the new school year. TikTok's owner has chosen Oracle over Microsoft as its preferred suitor to buy the popular video sharing app, according to a source familiar with the deal. The choice came a week before U.S. President Donald Trump's deadline to ban it in the U.S. if it wasn't sold. Microsoft said in a Sunday statement that TikTok's parent company, ByteDance, let them know that they would not be selling TikTok's U.S. operations to Microsoft. The Trump administration has threatened to ban TikTok by mid-September and ordered ByteDance to sell its U.S. business, claiming national security risk due to its Chinese ownership. Find more at voanews.com. Again, that is voanews.com via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Break Africa from the Voice of America. James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, September 14th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. West African leaders meet tomorrow, Tuesday, with yet another focus on the crisis in Mali.
I personally doubt that they will accept anything outside of the current constitution of Mali, because if they accept that, it means that they accept the idea of a coup, which is something that they excluded from the beginning.
Southern African countries reopen airports and schools in an attempt to get back to normal. Uganda has a new election observer team comprising local NGOs, and Tanzania's Electoral Commission says the October 28th election will be free, fair, and transparent.
The commission is independent, and this commission is established by the Constitution of the United Republic of Tanzania. So the claims of the presidential candidates of Chadema and ACT Wazalendo are baseless.
And a former Liberian passport official says he will sue the U.S. government. The stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Leaders of the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, will meet tomorrow, Tuesday, in the Ghanaian capital, Accra, in yet another summit over the crisis in Mali. At the last meeting on September 7 in the Niger capital, Niamey, the leaders gave the military junta until September 15, that's tomorrow, to name a transitional president and prime minister. Over the weekend, the junta proposed an 18-month transitional period to be led by a civilian or a soldier. However, the M5-RFP protest movement rejected the military's proposal. Human rights activist and political analyst Ibrahima Khan of Senegal says while there is room for a compromise, ECOWAS might find two of the military junta's proposals problematic, including the proposal of a vice president, which he says is outside Mali's constitution.
As you know, the military organized its own consultation process, came out with an idea of transition of 18 months, and also with some documents which clearly set the tone for a replacement to the constitution. Also, they said the president, the prime minister, and now a new vice president will be chosen by the military. I think when you look at the two documents, there are areas where clearly there will be consensus. But for me, the two conflicting issues is a process that is outside the current constitution of Mali, and this question of vice presidents, which never existed in Mali as an element of the executive. But I personally doubt that they will accept anything outside of the current constitution of Mali, because if they accept that, it means that they accept the idea of a coup, which is so far something that they excluded from the beginning.
Initial reports from Bamako say that the M5-RFP coalition, comprising of political leaders and civil society groups, have rejected the military transitional plan. It seems to me the major disagreement there is about whether the transitional process should be led by the military. On whose side in this debate do you think ECOWAS is going to come?
I think ECOWAS from the beginning said they want to see consensus among the different actors in Mali. But the problem was before the coup, there was a consensus around the M5. But when the coup happened, we discover a new branch of those who were against the IBK. So now they tried to talk to each other. I think they didn't reach an agreement. And I think it will be good for all of us to know from the M5, because saying that we disagree, it's one thing. They need to really also clarify their position around this charter of transition and around the new structure that the military have proposed. To me, time is running. Since 3 months, Mali doesn't have a government. And on the ground, every single day, people are attacking the army barracks, are attacking villages. Some attacks are just happening 200 kilometers from the capital city, Bamako. So there is an urgency to sort out this problem. But I don't believe that the military really understand that urgency as the leader of the region understand it, not only for the actors in Mali, but also for the Malian population, which is suffering not only for these different attacks, but also from the sanctions.
On the one hand, ECOWAS seems to be adamant about not allowing military leaders who take power by means of force to rule countries. On the other hand, did ECOWAS shoot itself in the foot by not taking action earlier during the protest movement in Mali?
Well, I think we all learn from our mistakes. I'm sure now, from this experience, ECOWAS will put in place a system where, when there is this kind of problem in a country, they will do better before rather than acting after a coup has happened. I'm sure ECOWAS will learn lesson from the Mali experience. But from where I'm sitting, I think there is a choice for ECOWAS. Either ECOWAS acknowledge the fact that, okay, a coup happened in Mali, the military have decided to put in place this and that. How do we really make sure that the transition is organized but without a leadership of a military?
Thank you so much again for speaking with us. We do appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Ibrahima Khan is a Senegalese human rights activist. He was speaking with us from the capital, Dakar. The director of elections in the Tanzania National Elections Commission says preparations for the October 28 election are continuing progressively. Wilson Charles says the commission is currently dealing with appeals from candidates whose nominations are being challenged. The opposition says the elections will not be free and fair because the commissioners and directors of elections are all handpicked by President John Magufuli. Charles said the opposition claims are baseless because the commission is governed by laws and regulations.
The commission is independent, and this commission is established by the Constitution of the United Republic of Tanzania, in particular Articles 74, Sub-Article 7, 11, 12, and 14. Tells more about the independence of the Electoral Commission of Tanzania. So the claims of the presidential candidates of Chadema and ACT Wazalendo are baseless and mere suppositions.
The opposition also said that your commission unfairly rejected some of their parliamentary candidates.
The rejections of candidates unfairly cannot be done by the commission. But the commission, what it does is to receive those appeals, analyze, and make decision based on the rules, regulation, and the laws that are in place. For this election, the objections have been coming mainly from candidates vying for the same position. And the other appeals are a result of candidates not being nominated, hence the appeal to the commission. So it's not true that it is the commission that rejects candidates from oppositions, but the commission deals with all issues from candidates from various political parties fairly and equally.
My understanding is that the commission has barred some local human rights organizations like the Tanzania Human Rights Defenders Coalition from observing the election. Is this true and why?
The law in Tanzania allows observation of election, but not monitoring. This is international best practice. The commission sent through official channels invitation for observations for the 2020 general election. The organizations are still completing the accreditation process through our observers management system. Once the process is done, we will be in a position to know the number of observers' missions that will be involved in this general election.
Assuming there is a runoff, can the opposition candidates form alliances under Tanzania election laws? I'm asking this question because in my interview with Chadema presidential candidate Tundu Lissu, he described what he called some strange rules that he says make it impossible for opposition candidates to form alliances.
A runoff envisaged by the National Election Act under Section 35G will be where no candidate has received the greatest number of valid votes cast. However, if there is a tie-up in the votes for the first highest, the tied-up candidates shall be the only candidates in that election. The issue of alliance between political parties falls under the purview of the law of the political parties. However, for your viewers, listeners' benefits, let us say that the Political Parties Act, Section 11, Cap A, lays down the procedure requirements for the formation of coalitions. If this is what the contestants meant by alliances, then the law is clear, and it allows political parties to form coalitions as prescribed.
Wilson Charles is the Director of Elections in the Tanzania National Electoral Commission. He was speaking with us from the capital, Dodoma. At least 60 local Ugandan non-governmental organizations, NGOs, have formed a strong national election observer team ahead of the 2021 presidential elections. Crispin Kahiru, a Ugandan electoral expert, says local observers will play a vital role given the many travel restrictions because of the coronavirus pandemic. Mugumi Davis Rakariji reports from Kampala.
The coalition of 60 local civil society organizations in Uganda is known as the National Election Watch Uganda, also known as the NEU. Rita Achilo, the head of the coalition, says they will focus on protecting the rights of women and youth during and before the elections.
Some of the concerns we have as women is the fact that commercialization of elections or use of money in the elections has been hyped up. And this is discouraging a number of women because, as we all know, women's economic muscle is not as much as that of men. And we anticipate a number of women to be limited due to resources.
Achiro, who also heads Uganda Women's Network, a local NGO which advocates for women's rights, says the coalition will educate masses about the dangers of both domestic and electoral violence. She says the coalition will establish dozens of offices across the country to inform voters of their rights. Ivan Otim, the coordinator of Youth Coalition for Electoral Democracy, a local youth NGO, agrees that sensitizing both women and youth will be important in determining a peaceful and meaningful election.
In a dynamic where you have 1 million young people disenfranchised from the voter register, and you have a dynamic population of 7 and so million young people who will be in the national voter register. The fundamental process here is that if you don't have voter mobilization initiatives, then the 7.8 million young people will not be willing and able to participate in the upcoming elections.
Achiro says the NEU will also sensitize the population how to stay safe from coronavirus disease during the electoral process.
As observers, one of the things we'll be looking at is how the SOPs are going to be adhered to, and also ensure that people have the right information in terms of using PPEs, washing hands, having masks on, and also keeping the social distance.
Crispin Kaheru, an election expert in Uganda, says the formation of the coalition is timely.
In the advent of COVID-19, foreign observers cannot fly into countries holding elections. Election observation is going to be largely domestic. Observation is going to have to be done through experts, or observers will have to work virtually and through partnerships.
Uganda's Electoral Commission already issued directives for campaigns to be conducted virtually. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji, Kampala, Uganda.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Monday, September 14th. Malawian President Lazarus Chakwera is calling for collaborative efforts in the fight against coronavirus, which has so far infected nearly 6,000 Malawians and killed over 170 others. But commentators said the government should also tackle other diseases rather than focusing on COVID-19 alone. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
In his weekly radio address Saturday, Chakwera said it is worrisome that local transmission has been on the rise despite various efforts to contain the virus.
Lero, tukamba munje kuti vapita masiku 162.
Today marks 162 days since the first case of COVID-19 was confirmed within our borders. The president said, he said that presently the transmission of the pandemic is more local than it is imported. So each of us needs to see ourselves and others as potential carriers of the virus. However, Chakwera said there is a need for cooperation in the fight against the pandemic. He asked Malawians to continue to observe three rules that health experts have prescribed for keeping the virus from spreading: hand washing, observing distance, and wearing face coverings. Chakwera heard health workers' efforts in the fight against the spread of the pandemic. So far, he said, the number of people tested have reached 48,000, of whom just over 10% have been found with the virus. He said of those confirmed to have the virus, over 60% have fully recovered, while 31% are still recovering. President Chakwera's remarks came at times when the country is easing some of the measures that were put in place to contain the spread of the virus. For example, Malawi opened schools in phases on September 7. This came after the opening of airports on September 1. Meanwhile, plans are at an advanced stage to resume sports activities and other recreational activities in 2 weeks' time. Health rights campaigner George Jobe supports calls for collaboration in the fight against the disease, especially in schools.
There's a challenge though in our schools that the teacher-pupil ratio in some schools is high. In such cases, there's need for schools to have the shifting system whereby some classes could be held in the morning and the others in the afternoon in order to decongest classrooms.
However, social commentator Humphrey Mvula told VOA that it's high time government starts to talk of other diseases which are also killing people in hospitals, rather than concentrating on COVID-19 alone.
But we equally have other diseases that have killed us, and they are infectious, TB, cholera, whatever. We have lived with those diseases, and we're living with them. If you go to the major hospitals, go and look at the death rate, you still have so many malarians dying every day of other diseases other than COVID.
In his address, President Chakwera said his administration has adequately armed the health sector to deal with all health matters affecting the country. He said in a 2020-2021 national budget, his administration has allocated about $273 million to the health sector, more than double the allocation given to the health sector in the previous national budget. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
A Liberian, Andrew Wamplo, says he is going to sue the U.S. government for traumatizing him and his family. Last week, U.S. Secretary of State Michael Pompeo designated Wamplo and his family unwelcome to enter the United States because of Wamplo's alleged involvement in significant corruption. Wamplo served as director of passport at the Liberian Ministry of Foreign Affairs from 2018 to 2019 and was arrested in 2019 along with a Nigerian national for allegedly selling Liberian passports to foreign nationals. In a statement, Secretary Pompeo said Mr. Wamplo was involved in passport fraud that undermined the rule of law and compromised the integrity and security of immigration process. Wamplo says the U.S. government is misinformed because he was exonerated by Liberian courts.
They have created trauma for my children. My children went to school today, they were bullied, and they could not stay in school, all because the U.S. government had placed a ban on them. And I know very well that what is being alleged, I'm not involved with it. I have challenged that in court, and the government of Liberia refused to provide evidence, and I was exonerated. Besides, if you read the article, the U.S. government did not say alleged corruption. The U.S. government said I was involved in significant corruption. And so it means that the U.S. government also got evidence to prove that Mr. Wamplo is corrupt. And that is my character. I would not sit here and allow any country or any individual for that matter to come and denigrate my character that I built over the years. I have worked for the foreign ministry for 16 years.
So, Mr. Wamplo, where would you be suing the United States? In the Liberian courts? In the International Court of Justice? Where?
That would be the decision of the legal team of Andrew Wamplo.
So, did you sell Liberian passports to foreigners as it has been alleged?
Mr. Botte, that is far from reality. It's a very far distance from my character. And there is no one who has a nationalistic interest will attempt doing that.
You said that you were exonerated. Have you been able to get your old job back as director of passport?
That is a process that is ongoing. And so it was astonishing when I saw the release yesterday. Because we went to the court, I have man clearance from the court clearing me of all charges. And there was a mandate from the court instructing the Ministry of Foreign Affairs to immediately have it reinstated. So it is a process that we're on now. And I saw this release from the U.S. embassy that is highly astonishing and indicting. And so immediately I contacted my legal team.
I was wondering, why not sue the Liberian government? Because the government of Liberia that first made the allegations against you.
It's a process. The actors decide where to start from. And I said, because of what it has caused for my family, I'm going to start with the U.S. government. If I come to the Liberian government, that can be later. But right now, as I said to you, imagine my children cannot go to school right now. They enter the classroom, their friends laughing at them, and they put them out of the class, all because U.S. government has said that they cannot travel to America because their father is corrupt. You cannot allow my children to be under such a trauma.
Are you concerned that the government of Liberia could rearrest you because of this U.S. sanctions?
I hold no fear. And I think that the government of Liberia can never arrest me because they got no evidence against me. I've done nothing. And that's why I said I will not leave this country. This has lasted for over a year. I had a lot of valid visas. All of us that did something wrong, we choose to leave this country. I said I am not leaving Liberia because I know I did not do anything in this country. Those that want to malign my character, let them go to court. Let's go to the court. The records are there. The passport system, it's not a system that you can go in and infuse anything ugly. Passports are issued numerically. And so when we get there, we will get to know.
Thank you so much again. So nice to talk with you.
You're most welcome, sir. It was a pleasure speaking with you as well.
Andrew Wampolo is the former director of passport at the Liberian Ministry of Foreign Affairs. He was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the news that the Confederation of African Football will hold presidential and general assembly elections on March 12, 2021 in the Moroccan capital, Rabat. According to CAF, the names of prospective candidates will be communicated to the various national associations on January 11, 2021. The 61-year-old incumbent president, Ahmed Ahmed, could seek a second four-year term. Staying with CAF, the continent's football governing body has announced that a rescheduled African Nations Championship will now take place from January 16th to February 7th, 2021. The tournament, which exclusively features players playing in African domestic leagues, was postponed earlier in the year due to the coronavirus pandemic. The competition was originally scheduled to take place from April 4th to the 25th in Cameroon. Also, the Continental Football Governing Body has revealed that the Champions League semi-finals will now be played over two legs on October 17th to 18th and 23rd to 24th, with the final set for November 6th, while the Confederation Cup single semi-finals will now be played on October 19th to the 20th and the final on October the 25th. And now to other sports. Ahead of the 2021 rescheduled Olympic Games, newly appointed Kenyan National Rugby Sevens head coach Innocent Simiyu says blending youth and experience is the only way to ensure that a proper structure is established to build a team for the years to come.
We are looking by 1st of October. Perhaps we'll start sending individualized programs to the players so that they can start working out before the team sessions begin. Because the key milestone in regards to our plan is if we have 90% of our players at a playing state.
And now to Zimbabwe, where more than 2,000 athletes have been approved to receive the Zimbabwean government's COVID-19 relief fund. A total of 2,328 athletes have been approved to receive the fund. This is according to Zimbabwe newspaper The Herald. The fund, which was launched in July, is said to help registered national sports associations, academies, athlete support personnel, individual athletes, and community clubs during the global health crisis. The former IAAF president Lamin Diack and his son Papa Masata Diack will this week know their fate in the corruption, influence trafficking, and laundering money charges brought against them.
First of all, I think any decision that they can take, if it's not in our favor, we can go to the court of appeals, to the appeal courts. But the second option is, first of all, I don't see the way they can really substantiate those accusations. The judges, the sitting judges that are doing the trial, are different from the investigating judges.
And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, September 14th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Butt in Washington, hoping that you will have a great week.